This is the one with a raunchy photo shoot.
Grenades by Mattel.
Zoe massaging unit chaps back to life.
And a cyber in the closet.
It's called The Invasion.
Here we go.
We're embarking on a voyage all through time and all through space, counting Daleks, Dalek Dude, and the Cybertronic race. Some Taurans look like taters, and Silurians all have wonky scales. And the Doctor has a TARDIS, we're reviewing all his tales. Who back when? Reviewing all of who there is. Who back when? Subscribe and rate on iTunes, please. Episode by episode, we're trudging down this temporal road. Come join us on this odyssey. What other choice could there be than who back when? Who Back When.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen of podcast land, and welcome to another fantabulous episode of Who Back When, a Doctor Who podcast.
Or Doc Past.
That's right. You're right. Or Doc Past.
That hurts to do it.
I'm Ponkin, by the way. Today we're doing C046, The Invasion, and I am joined in the studio by Nick O'Leary.
How you doing, podcast land?
Hello, Nick. So today we're looking at The Invasion, which is a Troughton serial.
Yeah.
It is an 8-episode arc.
The first 8-episode arc?
That's a good question. I'm not sure.
I think so.
It's certainly not the longest so far.
No. And another cyber.
Another cyber. This was originally meant to be entitled The Return of the Cybermen. It was not. Twas not.
No, that turns up later.
Oh, does it?
I think there is another episode or
that's
series.
That's an actual thing?
Possibly. Or a book. I don't know. One of them. I think it comes up again. But I was about to say, the audience is going to have to get all they can out of this review and serial because they don't turn up for another 7 years.
I know. Not until, it's not until Tom Baker.
Yeah.
It's crazy. We're going to go the entire end of Troughton, all of Pertwee, and a chunk of Baker until we get Cybermen again.
Yeah.
That's absurd.
That is absurd, especially when they found their best looking form.
Yeah, and also the form that they're going to retain for
quite some time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So here's the dealio. It's an 8-episode arc. 2 episodes are missing, episodes 1 and 4, but you can find animated versions of these. There are two ways in which you can do this. One, you can go out and buy a DVD, like I did, because I'm a moron. Or you can find everything completely for free on Dailymotion and watch it on Dailymotion, like I did, because I'm a fucking moron.
Although, if you do the Dailymotion route and you don't use your phone, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah,
you may as well have paid for it. Yeah,
No, it was annoying. So I have this on a beautiful DVD. There's tons of bonus footage, which we might get into at some point. Who knows? Mm. But I ended up watching this on my phone anyway.
Yeah, the Cybermen really pop on the small screen.
Oh, they really do. But the animations are really good.
They're really good. If anything, it's something that in me wants to see, like, whole reconstructions of serials just in one seamless like animated. They were real good.
What else have we seen that was animated by presumably the same company? We've had was
another
Moonbase was
yeah,
a
Moonbase.
Bit, right? Moonbase was animated. Reign of Terror was partly animated. That's a Hartnell one.
Yeah.
And something else. I can't remember now. Shall we jump into a bite-sized chunk of Who?
Let's. The TARDIS materializes on the wrong side of the moon, only to discover an alien presence that we'll ignore for 4 episodes and head off into the 1970s, less swinging London.
There they encounter the perfectly reasonable conglomerate of International Electromatics, led by Toby Vaughan, and UNIT, led by now Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart.
Toby has struck an accord with an old foe of the Doctor's, and as the title of this serial would imply, an invasion attempt ensues.
Ooh.
I don't know why. It's close to Halloween.
It is.
So I'm just going to say everything in a slightly spooky, and if I can affect it, Vincent Price-esque voice.
Oh, I like it. Peace go over. You are welcome. So this is the very first serial where UNIT makes an appearance. Like a proper...
Like a proper, fully-fledged, like the full UNIT.
Yeah. They bear the whole UNIT.
It's good to get a proper look at the UNIT. I didn't know how big the UNIT would be. Now I've seen it in all its glory.
When it was finally unsheathed, it was glorious.
Absolutely.
Rigid, though, right?
Yes, yeah, it absolutely was. It was...
There was no room for flexibility here.
Yeah, it was a very... I don't know where I'm at. I've exhausted all my... Yeah, and if you're unfamiliar with Who Back When, if you're just reading this, we make a lot of dick jokes.
Yeah. We're explicit on iTunes for a reason. So we started talking about units. Do you want to have a chat about what UNIT actually does? Because they are referred to, they're described by the Brigadier in this episode, or in the serial, as only conducting investigations but never arresting anyone. But they do very clearly command troops that are very well armed.
Well, yes, I mean... And we don't necessarily have a tradition, even really a military tradition of investigation that also carries fucking grenades.
Yeah, like, we don't arrest anyone. We blow them up, but we will not detain anyone.
And later, a court will try them. I don't know what they do. I think, again, it's one of those Thunderbirds-esque, you know, here's a military-like thing. It's very action-packed and stuff. And we're going to bring that in to assist the you know, like, it's going to be this thing, which I am not upset about at all. It's fucking awesome.
It is, yeah. It's totally awesome. I think we've talked about this on the show at some point, but not at depth. But do you feel that units here is what Torchwood is now?
Yes, although Torchwood ditches the sort of adolescent, slight post-war obsession with military things and Cold War things.
Oh, but we do get, don't we get like Torchwood's military uniforms and everything? Like here, obviously, they have regular
yes,
ranks
yes,
and
I
everything.
See at some point when in the genesis of Torchwood, not the Torchwood the series, not the...
Oh, no, sorry. I mean Torchwood as it's presented as a part of Doctor Who today. Like, alongside Capaldi, for example.
That's fair, although this unit is a much more romantic, fantastic...
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Endeavor, whereas that one was like, oh, military's bad. Post Cold War, whereas in the middle of Cold War, it's like military's great. And you know what? It was actually super. What I really liked, I know I've probably talked about this shit before, about probably the last time Lethbridge Stewart turned up, is I super love the attention to detail of how they go about process, like military process.
Oh yes,
it's obviously bullshit. But I love that there is a process, and they're not just like, hey, launch the missile, okay.
You say that. The launch the missile example, specifically the scene where they launch the missile, because we get the same shots twice, I believe. That seems the least structured of all of their actions.
No, that was okay.
It's like, this little girl or something. Oh, yeah, why don't you just punch that into a computer and press fire one more time?
Yeah.
But everything else is super structured.
And everything up to that point.
There's always like a respect of authority, and there's a certain like code of conduct. You only do something that someone has ordered you to do, and then you need, like, basically you need a stamp and a seal of approval and a signature from someone.
And Lethbridge is like, oh, I'm going to get a chopper to Sector 5. You need to get to Sector 5. You know, like, it's very well mapped out. It's all very good. And, yeah, I like that. I find that very comforting.
Also, I like that he has, like, he doesn't just have grunts that are, like, completely disposable. He has men. Yeah. Men whom you can count on. There's Benton. There's Turner. There's...
Hooch.
Okay, can I just bring something up?
Yeah.
I'm going to pop this on the post on Who Back When as well, whobackwhen.com. But I have met Benton.
Have you?
I've met John Levine. Let me show you a photo.
I feel like this is coming, because John Levine's been, we've been with John Levine, but, oh wow, he's a funky older looking dude now.
He's a fantastic chap, an incredibly charismatic.
Oh, I had a thing, this is not to do with this show, but fuck, I need really want to talk about it. I think I found the people, or the designer company that did the graphics for the opening of New Who.
You mean the latest theme?
The one that's out of sequence.
Oh, there were a few that were out of sequence. You mean the original first New Who serial? Like
yeah,
the Eccleston
so.
Ones
yeah.
and the early Tennant ones?
I think I found it was that one.
Okay.
We could phone them up and see if they care about the fucking... if that's real.
Yeah, let's do that. And also, please, I am begging you, can we just sit down and compare themes? I will show you that I'm right.
I would rather talk to these people. Put this fucking... And if they know that there's a big YouTube video about all this shit.
Okay, well, right. Anything else on the unit front? What do you think of the Brigadier? Because I love him.
I am absolutely man-crushing huge.
We met him together the last time as well, I think.
Yes, the Yeti.
With the Yetis. And, yeah. What was that called?
Abominable Snowman. No, that's the first one.
Yeah.
So this was, I don't know, they were in the underground.
I can't remember. Yeah, Yetis in London. And in fact, there are striking similarities between the structure of this serial, that one, and the Daleks' Master Plan.
Go on.
Okay, and there's going to be a little bit of, well, a very obvious trivia associated with this as well. But first off, let's do the Yeti one. What is it called?
I'm trying.
Hang on, I can find it on whobackwhen.com. Asking you, ladies and gentlemen. The Web of Fear.
That was it.
First off, in the Web of Fear, we also have the Brigadier. Then he was a colonel, I think. Colonel Lethbridge Stewart. He was also in command of all these soldiers. He was also encountering an alien presence in London, which was the first time that they had encountered it. This alien presence also used tunnels under London to travel around. We get to see people go underground and fight them. We get to see people crawl up from the sewers, basically, except it was the tube in Web of Fear. Fairly similar, I think. We also had What was his name? The scientist in the Web of Fear?
Travers.
Travers, who
and
had a daughter.
Snowman.
Yes, you're right. Exactly. So Travers and his daughter, who, and you have a bit of trivia associated with this.
Yes. So this serial, Invasion, was supposed to also feature Professor Travers, possibly his daughter as well, but that's unclear. But there was a decision made to replace him with... Very different.
Incredibly
don't
different.
Do not get them mixed up. Professor Watkins, because of, what were they called? Oh, what was the two?
Hainsman and Marvin?
No, Mervin Hainsman.
Mervin Hainsman and something something. Anyway, the writers.
Of the Dominators.
Yeah, we talked about this in our, listen to our Dominators review, who had a copyright dispute with the BBC and therefore left. And they simply would not allow the BBC to use their characters. So yeah. The BBC went, suck on this for having created the vaguest, blandest possible characters. Yeah, like, we just changed their names.
I
and
don't know what we'll do
knew.
Without Professor Travers. There aren't any other professors.
Fucking hell.
So they picked...
But do you know what I don't understand? I still don't understand this. Like, why do you need to square that circle? So they've gone to London in the 1970s.
Yeah.
Why did they not just randomly go to someone else's house where it's Professor Watkins? Why did they have to go find Professor Travers?
Because they had already written a story which involved a professor and his daughter, or niece, or in this case, niece, but and it was professor and daughter.
And they couldn't have just...
What's the cheapest
like three
possible...
fucking lines.
Yeah, but it's the cheapest possible change, isn't it? Because otherwise they have to figure out a new way for them to encounter what's her legs?
Isabel.
And a new excuse for, oh, she also coincidentally has an uncle for a professor, or a professor for an uncle. This way they just went, we're going to go there. He's not here. You'll do. You know, that's fine.
He's house sitting.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I
love that scene, by the way.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, I love all of those scenes. I have a bit of a crush on Isabel.
Huge.
What's her legs?
Izzy could get it.
Oh my goodness. And that photo shoot, which is clearly just a ruse to get the boys out so that she and Zoe can indulge in their sapphic exploration.
That's got to be one of the world's first examples of a selfie on the BBC. It has to be.
Oh.
Yeah. She's gorgeous and very just like playful. And,
yeah, super playful. Very. She reminds me a little bit of Polly. Do you remember Polly from The War Machines?
Less posh.
Less posh, you're right.
Less posh. But and certainly more 70s and...
Yeah, she's swinging. She's fun.
And has ideas about feminism.
Yeah.
People can't see this, but I'm holding up my hat. It's not supposed to be ironic, this.
It looks like it.
It sounds ironic, but it's not supposed to be ironic, which is cool. Anyway, yes, I like that scene. I also did think, well, you're a really shitty house guest writing on all of the fucking...
Oh, walls. I know.
That is not how you house it.
That prick. Seemed like a quirk that they just didn't really get into.
There are
a few things that they don't get into in this episode.
What's the trope that Rawmeister loves so much? Pixie Dream Girl? Manic Pixie Dream Girl?
Yes, yeah.
That sounds like a Manic Pixie Dream Girl-esque thing to do.
I guess, yeah. Oh, shout out to Rory. Either way, yeah, I get all kinds of tingles when she and Zoe hang out. Can I ask a question about Zoe in this instance? This is really pertaining to something later on in the serial with Zoe. Let's introduce this. They land outside London.
Yes.
He somehow makes the TARDIS invisible.
Yep.
We've never seen that before, but it's cool that he can do that. In fact, I assume that he couldn't affect the exterior of the TARDIS at all, right? It's broken, and therefore it always looks like a police box wherever he goes. Isn't that the whole spiel, right? So he makes it invisible. They head into London. They don't go back to the TARDIS until the very end of the serial.
Mm-hmm.
Inside the TARDIS is the wardrobe. Inside the wardrobe are the clothes of the main characters. What is Zoe wearing in the beginning of this serial? London human clothes.
But then she ends up in like a sparkly onesie.
Yeah, she's wearing the onesie that she wore in the Mind Robber. But she never goes back to the TARDIS.
No, see, this is a sparklier version.
I swear to God, it's the same one.
Do you think so?
Yeah, yeah.
I think the other one was smoother, and this is glittery or sparkly or something.
I think the other one... Was the other one not glittery? I think it was. It doesn't matter. Regardless... Where did she get her fucking space onesie from?
It is the 70s.
She's wearing
It could have been Woolworths.
Oh, I swear that's the same one she wore in The Mind Robber. And she's never gone back to the TARDIS.
That's true. I mean, Jamie must be humming at this point.
Oh, he is.
He must be a smelly.
A constant draft under his kilt.
Oh, yeah, he must have the sweatiest balls in Christendom.
I read a really ridiculous piece of trivia about his kilt. you know, there's the scene where they're climbing down the rope ladder.
Yep.
He's at the bottom. Above him is Waterlegs. And Waterlegs is wearing like a mini skirt or a mini dress or whatever. And apparently the wind constantly kept picking up her dress. like just showing her off to Mr. Kilt Boy underneath, who was smiling because he had had someone sew weights, lead weights, into his kilt, but he had never warned her of this.
That is some industrious perving.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I could tell you, but then again, let's just pretend I never thought of this.
Later on, the actor tragically died from lead poisoning.
Okay.
Okay. Right, so we've picked up Isabel, who we've, you know, Professor's missing, and we're going to... Oh, no, we've missed an important bit.
Okay.
The first actual contact with UNIT, they don't know they've got contact with UNIT.
Oh, that's true. That is awesome. In fact, we haven't even spoken about Toby Vaughan yet. But yeah, so, dude, take it away.
The gruff driver that gives us the exposition, the one that drives them to London.
Yeah. Isn't that Benton? Benton is definitely in the car. There are two dudes in this car. They look like Men in Black, and one of them is faux shizzle Benton.
Oh, I hope so. It is Benton then. Anyway, tells them, you know, about Electromatic.
Oh, yeah.
Which is, it's Apple, right?
Yeah, it's Apple or Google or Microsoft.
I'd say an Apple because I have hardware.
Yeah, but it's also the, yeah, I suppose. I was going to say, yeah, but it's also shitty hardware. But yeah, it is. It's Apple. It's exactly Apple.
Yeah. Okay, so two things I've learned. So Tobias Vaughan, Toby Vaughan.
Yeah, I have a question for you about him as well.
Well, I've learned one, well, at least, you know, this just inalienable human truth, right? Just about all humans. If someone has a shirt and suit without collar, they're one of two things.
They're a Bond villain?
They're either a maniacal, you know, psychopath bent on taking over the world, or an Indian prime minister. Those are your two options. And it's hard to tell the difference sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
Just in case, yeah.
Actually, I only said before there are clear parallels between this and the Web of Fear, but there are also parallels between this and the Daleks' Master Plan. In the Daleks' Master Plan, the president of the solar system, or the prime minister of the galaxy, or whatever, one of those things, is in cahoots with the Daleks, and doesn't understand until the very end that the Daleks are obviously going to double-cross him and so on. Guess who played the president of the solar system?
Who?
The same guy who plays Toby Vaughan.
Is it the same guy?
Yeah, it's the same dude. So it's the
He'll
same
never learn. No.
So yeah, same dude, very similar role, very, very similar arc, and how, clearly
he,
the same
age. Has he got jowlier?
He has...
Pretty jowly.
As I recall, so Dalek's Master Plan is 12 episodes, all of them missing. So I only saw stills of this. And as I recall, he was in blackface.
Why?
For no reason. Actually, I say blackface. He may very well have been in like greenface or blueface, but you know, in black and white TV, on black and white TV, he did not look green to me.
Jesus.
I may be misremembering that, but I swear to God, that's definitely something that
just
I talked about.
Constantly late to minstrel parties.
Like, it was just horrific. Horrific.
Anyway, yeah. What do you think of the gentleman that plays Toby Vaughan in general?
Well, can I ask you a question about his character?
Sure.
Well, in answer to your question, yes, I think he's spiffing. I think he does a very good job of it. In fact, I think he does a much better job of it than he did playing Mavic Chen was the name of the character in Daleks.
I think whilst every inch plays this sort of slightly groovy, weird, psychic, psychotic, you know, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Does a little bit too much shouting for my liking.
Oh, my goodness.
He does a lot of screaming.
When we're done here, I'm going to play you the after-credit sequence from the Daleks Master Plan review, the Who Back When review, because I just did a compilation of stuff that he shouts.
Yeah.
That's something he does, man.
This actor's a shouty actor. Okay, go on. Ask me your question.
Okay. Can you please explain to me...
No. I know where you're going.
Why... Is he bulletproof?
Do you know, it wasn't until actually after we finished the series, like as I was walking here to Punk Plaza.
Like, oh, yeah, they never resolved that.
I was like, why is he a robot? Why is he a robot and his brain is still human? Why?
Wait, is he a robot?
Yeah, no, because...
Or is he wearing like a bulletproof shirt or something?
In a conversation he has with the Cybermen through his like his weird sort of space comms thing, he does say, you know, I might be cybernetic, but my brain is still human, something like that.
Does he say that? I thought he said, I'm happy for you to replace my body, but my mind needs to remain the same.
I think, and I may be misremembering, that has already happened, which would explain why he's a bulletproof.
but it doesn't explain why they did that at all.
And also, why does he look like a human? Why have they made a less clunky, clearly more flexible version of themselves?
Who's bulletproof.
Yeah. He seems way better than a Cyberman. Like, I mean, ignore the mind aspect. Like, to them, he is inferior because he's not part of the collective or whatever. But his body, just the physicality of his body, clearly it is superior because he can, A, run. He can jump.
Jowl.
He can bend. He probably has a dick.
Maybe.
Possibly. Right?
He's completely unclear. That was never resolved. He's just bulletproof.
Where does he go in the end?
He gets shot, doesn't he?
Yeah. He goes... It's so similar to Dark's Master Plan. Spoiler alert, by the way, if you don't want to sit through 12 episodes of that. He gets his Cerebroton machine. Great name, by the way. Goes up to the roof to the radio, whatever.
Oh, and the Cybermen...
Shoot him.
Zap him.
Yeah.
Which, again, can they?
Apparently so. He's immune to human weapons, but not to whatever that flashlight is.
Yeah, it's unclear at all. That weird scene where Professor Watkins tries shooting him.
Okay, another question about that scene. So the reason they go up there is because they want to destroy the radio transmitter, right?
Yes.
Do they?
Yes.
Do they really?
Well, we don't actually see it happen off screen, but the Doctor says, there's things up there, to kind of Lethbridge Stewart, and he says, I'm on it, and then they run off.
Oh, I see. Oh, so, well, in that case, there are several things in the serial, because I made a note of a couple of things where we basically get that Ben Affleck as Batman post-action scene summary thingy, where it's like, you just missed something amazing, we'll never show you. That kind of thing, where there's an altercation in the sewers, we never get to see that. One of the chaps, what's his name? Old Billy.
Old Billy.
No, what is his name? Hang on.
I'm fine with Old Billy.
I swear to God, yeah, let's just call him Old Billy, but what is his name? I swear he's referred to as Old Billy, what's his name, like
Old Billy Big Balls.
That's his name. Yeah, that's his name. I've written that down.
Got it. Old Billy Big Ball. It's old, O-L apostrophe.
Yeah, Old Billy Rutledge. That's what it is. So yeah, Old Billy Rutledge, who is, he's the Minister of Defense. There's an altercation that sees him die. We never get to see that happen.
Yeah.
And there's another scene where a unit soldier just runs into either Benton or the Brigadier, probably the Brigadier, and goes, the streets are full of Cybermen. We just had the biggest fight ever. They were impervious to bullets. But I think this works. I was like, wait, did I miss it? No, I didn't miss something. You just didn't film that.
Can we talk about them, their munitions or ammunition?
Go for
as it were. What the fuck? Like,
are we going to have the Yeti conversation again?
Very possibly. So, okay. Grenades work.
Yep.
By the way, I don't know much about this sort of thing. Maybe there are people that are sort of military enthusiasts. But grenades are much more explosive than that.
Yeah.
There's just a lot of puffs, and the fucking Cybermen fall down, and then they drop some more grenades down.
Did you want to see, like, arms and legs flying around?
Well, no, but I mean, like, the grenade goes down the sewer. How are the sewer walls and everything still good?
Yeah, but didn't we have this with the Yeti in Web of Fear as well?
So, grenades work and bazookas work.
I love that, by the way.
Bazookas are great.
Bazookas are so cool. That scene where Not Mavic Chen has just been killed, and the Doctor is like, he's jumping around because apparently the cyber explosions can only, like, pinch his bottom. And the unit just goes, get the fuck down on the ground, Doc, and then they bazooka over him.
I hated, not that bit, that bit was cool.
Yeah.
I hated the run and jump and the girlish.
Oh, yeah, yeah, no, that was completely
this out of place. So up to this point, it's been this awesome running battle.
Yeah, no, okay, the Doctor's reaction, totally out of place, but the bazooka over him is awesome.
Super badass.
You probably hate this. I loved that afterwards, when they just go past him, what's her legs, just has a photo shoot with him for no reason, and he, like, starts posing.
I was actually okay with that. I was fine with that. I also liked that Zoe went to destroy the machine with Colonel Lethbridge Stewart. They both ran off, and then they...
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, so, see, I missed that. I completely missed that. Okay, what's the Cyberman plan?
So plan goes like this. I think I can try to map this out.
Okay, bear in mind that it changes halfway through.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or towards the end.
Yeah, sorry.
Jowly Steve Jobs has contacted them in deep space somehow. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They've come back, replaced his body for free, I guess, as part of the negotiation. He's promised them the minerals that are on Earth.
Yeah.
In exchange for the ability to control the world.
Yeah, and he keeps the cyber planner in his closet.
Yes.
And the cyber planner, or is it planner? Yeah, it's a cyber planner.
Who built that room for him?
I'm guessing he's okay with that sort of shit. That used to be his bondage closet. He just took all the ropes and gear out of there and popped the cyber
dungeon.
Planner in.
Now it's a cyber dungeon. Cool.
I love that the cyber planner never hears what he says when he turns around. He's like, by the way, I can't trust those fucking cybernetic organisms, can I?
Yeah.
What's his name? Barnett or whatever.
Let's make electromagnetics great again. Anyway, it's okay. Minerals for control.
Yeah.
And then...
Then
it changes to the Cybermen want to replace everyone on the Earth with Cybermen.
Not everyone.
Or
they're going
selected.
They're going to select some and they're going to kill everyone else.
Yes. And he's like, no, I don't do that.
No. I'm in charge. And they go, okay. Of course you are in charge. And he buys it.
He's like, oh, our bargaining posture hasn't changed several times through this negotiation. Nothing to be worried about. So they're going on with this idea that he gets to control the world. They get minerals, I guess, is still the operating.
And they're
going
to take humans.
And take some humans.
And then, but wait, hang on. At some point, and it may even be in the same discussion, but at some point they go, this is the one where he goes, well, I mean, my mind will remain human. They go, we will assimilate humanity. These dudes, at the very least, most of them, will become Cybermen. And yeah, you can be in charge of them, but they will all be robots. Like, you will all be robots.
Yeah.
So at this point, it's like, colonize.
Well, it gets... I'm not sure that...
And I think he's happy with that. He's like, no, we need a single voice, which actually matches the Cybermen approach.
Yes, I mean, he's definitely keen to be that. But then it changes again, because they feel betrayed because of the humans fighting back.
It sounds like you're describing an emotional reaction, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And so they feel betrayed, and therefore they go from will colonize to will assimilate to will destroy everyone.
Every living thing.
Every living thing. So, like, plants, dogs.
With a weird...
Dolphins. Fuck those dolphins. And this serves no purpose to them. It would be more logical for them to just go, all right, we'll find a different planet. We'll go elsewhere.
Well, maybe because perhaps they're still in the solar system.
So it's just proximity?
It's just proximity. They can't get that far. I mean, from Mondas to wherever they're, you know. And oh, because what's the 14th planet again?
Oh, yeah. There was something about that. Isn't that a reference to the... I haven't read it, but there's a novel which is a prequel to this.
Which people... What's that there's a paper. There's like a research paper on it.
Oh, really?
About a theory as to what the 14th planet was. I forget what the... Telos?
Telos is the original planet, isn't it?
Yes. So there was someone has written a paper that theorizes that the 14th planet was Telos or something like that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Interesting, eh?
Very possible.
Why would you want... I mean, coolest name for a bomb.
The Cyber Megatron Bomb, that's literally on my screen.
The Cyber Megatron Bomb sounds something like I want to be afraid of.
Okay, I've got two questions about the Cyber Megatron Bomb.
Yes.
Bomb.
Yeah, bomber.
Number one, why'd they bring one? And number
two... They're always packing. I've always got a couple of
Cyber Megatron bombs.
You can't go to a party without bringing a Cyber Megatron bomb.
Okay, that was number one. Number two, what is this bomb exactly? Because they're going to deliver it on the same radio beam. This is a quote. Deliver on the same radio beam that they use to coordinate their invasion. That's a quote. So this isn't... This isn't a bomb. This is more like... Maybe it's kind of like the signal that they sent at one point.
That's kind of interesting.
Right? So it's not something to blow up the Earth. So maybe they're sending a signal, or they want to send a signal to kill everyone, or, you know, most people, and the rest, ground troops, are going to take care of it. And then they're going to take resources, all the minerals that otherwise not Mavic Chen had promised them.
Yes.
And then they just...
It still seems like they can have the whole thing.
Yeah, they don't need any of this.
They don't need any of this at all. Like a
Why all the subterfuge?
Yeah.
Isn't this something that we've discussed before?
We do this all the time.
Every time. Just go there, murder people, then you're done.
You're done. We can't be in space. There's no point hiding behind the moon. We can't be there.
Oh, that's not true, because isn't this... This must be after the 10th planet, for example. This must be after the moon base, right? Oh, yeah. Wait, no. No, because the moon base was far... Okay, so I think we found a plot hole. Or I think we found a continuity mistake. So the Brigadier clearly is in the late 60s, right?
Yes.
Super duper clearly. He's in quote-unquote present-day London. Moon base was in the year 2000-something.
Yes.
A 10th planet surely was far in the future as well.
What's that? No, because there's hundreds of years between moon base and... Or there's time between it.
Okay, yes, that is true. But that just brings it even further into the future.
No. When is 10th planet based?
Let's look this up. 10th planet takes place in 1986. The invasion takes place in London circa 1979.
Mm-hmm.
And the moon base, 2070. But doesn't that mean... That's still... 10th planet, we had people in space, didn't we?
Yes.
On the 10th planet, in the 10th planet serial, there were like astronauts flying around and they were, you know, there were like space fights. That's 8 years after this, 7 years after this. Did you say 86 or 87?
No, moon base had space fights.
Both had space fights.
Both had space fights.
In the 10th planet, isn't it like the general son who's one of the astronauts flying around in space?
Oh, that might be right, yeah.
So, and if that was in 86 or 87 or whenever that was, then that means that's, that's 7 or 8 years after this.
Yeah.
So in 7 or 8 years... We are also super-duper capable of going into space.
To a point.
Okay.
Not that super-duper capable.
No, but still capable enough.
Well, still. Okay. What I find thing is that, why are these Cybermen more advanced than the ones that are coming? How have they got here? They must have travelled back through time.
Oh, interesting.
Must have done,
yeah,
right?
You're right. Well, I mean, we've had Cybermen from different dimensions. We probably will get Cybermen travelling through time at some point. We've had Daleks travelling through time so far on Classic Who.
Well, the thing is that Tobias Vaughan says that he contacted them.
What?
Through
he says
deep
that?
Space, yeah.
I totally missed
he says,
that.
I'm the guy that got, you know, I found them through in deep space. He's like, so...
So you are able to go into space.
Well, because the thing is, Mondas,
he has that massive
Mondas
setup.
Still exists at this point.
You're right. Holy shit, Mondas does exist. So these are coming from Mondas.
No, we don't know that, because they're better than the fucking Mondas ones. And they said deep space, whereas Mondas was on the same trajectory as us, just the opposite.
Okay. And it, I guess this also explains why we never get a scene of the Cybermen going, oh, it's the Doctor, we recognize him. There's never anything like that, because if they haven't traveled through time, then they've never met him.
Guess not.
That's pretty cool, I think.
No, if they've traveled through time, they have met him.
Yeah, but they probably haven't traveled through time.
So there's just another set of Cybermen. Something.
Yeah, I think like it's just, let's not think about it, you know. Oh, Mavic Chen happens to look like the guy who runs the universe later on. Let's not think about it. Oh, these Cybermen look slightly different than before. Oh, it's just because we have a higher budget. You didn't notice, but they looked exactly the same before. I think that's it.
Okay, moving on.
Sorry,
what did you think of
BBC
of the Cybermen?
The what, sorry?
The Cybermen.
What did I think of the Cybermen?
Yes.
I like them. I think the new Cybermen outfits looks... They look like the Cybermen that I remember as a kid.
Yes.
I never saw the stocking Cybermen when I was a kid.
Nor did I. I mean, those were infinitely
so
scarier.
Creepy. Oh,
but yes,
so
these Cybermen are the Cybermen format-ish.
Yeah,
I think will pervade for the next...
Like 20 years.
20 years, minimum. Yeah.
Yeah, I like them. I really, really like them. I think they were very, very good. I didn't really understand why they have both the chest plate gun, and sometimes they hold a rifle in addition to that, because it seems like they don't need that rifle.
Also, one upgrade that they might think about making is installing the app Quick Draw. Because... Why were they like, you know, out fucking drawn by Toby Vaughan and the Doctor with their weird little emotion machine?
I think that's just because they weren't expecting anyone.
At some point, though, they were literally facing each other with a gun. It's got to be harder to pull together that, you know, that sort of the innards of a fucking calculator.
Isn't this
something.
The Rocky approach, though? Isn't it the, we can take a beating, so that's how we get the upper hand? Like, we assume that you're going to be firing metal projectiles at us, so we don't have to draw quickly, fire at will. We'll just take our time, and then we'll kill you eventually.
I feel like you've misunderstood the plot of Rocky. But yes,
Isn't that what happens in Rocky? You are right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what happens in Rocky.
But I think it's going to be probably a better thing would be to have both, right?
Yes, I agree. Okay, so there's that. There's the Cyber Planner. We've seen the Planner before. He's fine. I like him.
Yeah.
But best of all, the spaceships. They looked awesome.
They did look good.
And we got some very nice scenes of them just floating around in space. Mm. Loved it.
And being shot at.
And yes, you're right. Super cool.
Okay, I'm going to pivot here.
Go for it.
So the dual plan, there were two plans had to be in effect to bring down the Cybermen. Take down the receiver.
Yes, and also
shoot at something in the sky. Also,
with?
Well, firstly, there were some normal missiles.
Well, there were also...
A Russian missile.
And also, quote, anti-missile missiles.
Anti-missile missiles. I mean, in the 70s, that was a thing. That was real. There are anti-missile missiles.
This is mentioned in the same conversation in which the Brigadier also uses an expression that I really want to use. I want to incorporate that into my vernacular whenever I want someone to hurry up. Get your skates on.
Have you never heard that before?
No, I love that expression.
That is a very solid British expression.
Really? Never heard it before. Yeah. Awesome. Get your skates on. Loved it.
The Russian thing. I was just like, that, again, seemed like anti, like, against the grain of the Cold War narrative. It's
exactly.
We need our old friends, the Russians, to help.
Like, humanity unites.
But the best thing about that whole thing is, like, I'm sure I've read something. Here's an old jeweler's safe. Here's a box folder. Yes, I think there's a Russian satellite due to be launched. Or no, the Russians are having a jaunt into space. Yeah.
I remember they were doing a countdown when we were being attacked.
Also, it's Bonfire Night.
I liked the whole involvement of the Russians, because somehow they do manage, right? They manage only because UNIT intervenes and helps them, right? I think so, because at first it's like, yes, we can definitely count on the Russians to want to help, but they don't have the technology to do so. It will take them at least a day or something.
Was that it?
I think so.
Because also everyone on Earth was being controlled. So whether they could pop over and just do shit with Russian stuff and no one would say boo to a goose, because everyone was on
So
Earth.
Was it a Russian missile in the end that did
it? It was a Russian missile that the quote, I think, or relative quote, paraphrase, that the astronaut payload had been replaced by a warhead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Either way, I loved all of those scenes. Great work with the miniatures. And yeah, the Cybermen somehow feel like a more legitimate threat now.
Yes.
Because they're mobile and they're just so much more calculated.
Well, because when something is it's on a planet like Mondas, or it's, in the tomb or whatever, the circle in the sky. It just seems very isolated. Where the fuck did all these Cybermen come from? Kind of feels like they're just out there waiting, biding their time, eventually.
Wait, those Cybermen on Earth or the Cybermen in space?
The Cybermen in space.
Oh, okay.
The Cybermen in general, pluralized, that as a concept, they feel this time way more menacing than they did Moonbase, Tomb. What's the one?
The wheel.
The wheel in space. The wheel in space, thank you. They feel much more, encompassing. Intergalactic terror.
Yeah, agreed. Absolutely agreed. And for that reason, it's all the more mind-boggling that they don't appear for ages.
7 years or something like that.
It's ridiculous.
But are we just going to get loads of Dalek shit now?
I guess so. Loads of Daleks. But we also...
Was the Terminator estate just cool for a while?
I guess so. Hey, can I bring up a couple of sound bites?
Please.
Just for funsies. So, first of all, the Doctor not really understanding how many people live on the Earth.
It's 12, or 12 billion, one of the two. It's at least 5.
There are two references to this. First of all, International Electromatics, they have machines all over the world. Like, every nation has lots of different machines produced by International. It's Apple, as you said. And every single one of these machines has a little thing inside, a little extra chip that also sends out this signal. So you'd assume that there are quite a few of these circuits in the world. So we have this soundbite from episode 6.
But there are hundreds, thousands of these circuits and eye equipment all over the world.
It's okay.
So that's a good one. And then we also have another one where later on he's having a chat with not Mavic Chen, and the Cybermen have already said, like, we're going to release the Cyber Megatron bomb. All life on Earth will be extinguished. All life on Earth. And the Doctor says,
oh, for heaven's sake, stop thinking about yourself. Think of the millions of people on Earth who are about to die.
Well, actually, it was supposed to be every living thing, Megatron bomb.
Yeah.
So there's grass. That's like, that's fucking everything.
That's why I brought up puppies before. Yeah. Literally everything will die.
Yogurt. Yakult. Like, Yakult will go.
And I've got another soundbite in episode 8, which is just a little bit of 1960s sexism, because we haven't talked about that really, and that is...
Can't we keep her on, sir? She's much prettier than a computer.
But, and yes, yes. And she seemed to be very happy with that, coming from the year 2005 or wherever she yeah. come from. 2069, should I say.
Well done.
And... But they do actually have what might be considered one of the early feminism
yes,
chats.
You're right. Right.
That's Isabel saying to Benton and Jamie, because Benton was Jamie, it Benton or was it Lethbridge Stewart? It's Benton, maybe.
I think it's Lethbridge Stewart, and then again to Jamie right afterwards.
Oh yeah, no, you're right. It's because Isabel hatches the plan to take photographs.
Yeah.
And she said, okay, well, I'm it's the first bit I love is like, am I to assume that all what you said isn't just total codswallop? Something to that effect. It's like, fuck it out, mate. So that was fun. And then, yeah, she says, you know, why can't I do it? That's what the, you know, it's for my men here. But I think that there was a slight disconnect.
Well, wait, hang on. I thought you were going to talk about the whole bigoted, anti-feminist.
Yeah, yeah, that's coming.
Oh, okay, sorry.
What happens is Lethbridge says, no, it's not for you. It's for my men to do.
Yeah.
It's like, well, for all the bigoted, anti-feminist, you know,
yeah.
all that sort of thing. It's like, yeah, what, no. Because the thing is what you've just described is a military
operation.
Yeah,
yeah.
And
you're
not qualified
exactly.
Like, at all.
You're barely a professional photographer.
Barely.
Yeah, like you are professionally accustomed to being on the other side of a lens and now you own a camera.
Which is fine.
That's
you're
fine.
Let's say you're a very good photographer.
Very possibly. Are you wearing camouflage? No. Are you trained in military operations? No. This is not a female versus male thing.
No. You're just woefully underqualified
yeah,
for
but
this.
Then Jamie swings that argument around because either What's Her Legs or Zoe tells... I should probably, especially in this context, stop referring
What's
to...
What's Her Legs? That's awful. Isabel.
Sorry.
Sally Faulkner.
Yeah, I need to show you a photo of her later on.
Oh my God.
Nick is giving me a thumbs up sign. Anyway, so Isabel or Zoe tell Jamie, he's just saying that because he thinks that men are superior. And Jamie literally takes what you just said, scraps it, and replaces it with pure, genuine sexism in that he goes, yeah, it's true, isn't it? But he says it in a very playful way. I don't think he really means it.
And then sisters resolve to do it for themselves and get a guy murdered.
Wait, hang on. Doesn't Jamie...
Yeah, they all go.
Oh, okay.
Or at least Jamie is sort of coerced into going. But yes, then a guy gets murdered.
A guy gets murdered?
They go into the sewers to take pictures, some grainy-ass shitty pictures.
Oh, yeah.
And one guy...
Oh,
does.
The policeman.
I mean, no, two guys then. Policeman and one of...
One of Benton's men.
Because I remember thinking
or
it was quite
men.
Interesting where they said, bring the body, like a couple of times.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which that never happens.
Absolutely never happens. I remember that as well. But it also shows like, oh, well, we have respect for our own and we're very different from the Cybermen who they lose Cybermen left and right.
Having said
and they
that,
never do anything about it.
No, I like that. I like that interpretation. But having said that, it immediately was just like not at all thought about.
No.
Like,
oh, no.
It's like, we should have a giant inquiry and someone should be angry at you fucking, you know, like.
No, because no one cares about that. Why? Because the paperwork is done. It's not Benton, it's Turner. And no one cares about it because what does Turner do? He goes on to plow What's Her Legs. There is a scene very clearly where they are standing by a window, wistfully looking out at the world, going, we just boned. Right?
Well, no, because he does ask her out, doesn't he? He's like, I'll take you to dinner. He's like, are you rich? No. Not at a captain's salary.
Yeah, but that's in the beginning. And then fast forward to somehow he is in her pad.
It did seem like quite a lot of airtime for a non-companion.
For her?
Yeah, like there's a lot of airtime for
but
her.
But isn't that because she used to be What's-His-Face's daughter?
Well, yes, but I mean, and that's fine. But why did we need the colour of the romance and the... Why did we need any of that?
I liked it.
I liked it too. I'm just like, it's quite an odd choice.
I guess. I mean, it was a good choice, I think. Maybe it's something that we've been missing from other longer serials.
Well, yeah, I mean, I did think, whilst watching this, and you could weigh in here, how did people fucking keep track 8 weeks on the draw? Do you mean? Like, I watched the whole thing in maybe two sittings, one 4% and the other 4%.
Yeah.
There were just bits of like, what the fuck? Who was that guy? I guess there's only like 3 channels at this point. 2, maybe.
I guess so, yeah. And people are serious hardcore fans. I mean, we watch Doctor Who, New Who, on a weekly basis.
Yeah.
Yeah, during the season. That's fine. I mean, we watch a bunch of series on a weekly basis, and that's fine.
That's true, but this one story, this one, like, 8-episode, you know, do you remember who Benton is, and you remember that? And you're like...
God, I love Benton.
Yeah.
I remember Benton from, like, when I was a kid. I remember thinking... I'm like Benton, and the Brigadier is like my dad.
Wow. Who is the Doctor?
I was also the Doctor, obviously.
Oh, you're also the Doctor.
Yeah.
And so.
Only child. Only child, few friends.
Right.
So, okay.
It was long.
Are we back to talking about the unit again?
Yeah, it was a far-reaching unit. No, the series was quite long, and though a good one, and we'll get to that in the actual the ratings. But I feel like they could have cut bits. They could have put this into the six.
Yeah,
they could have.
Do you know what I think they could have cut? The whole Billy Rutledge thing.
Oh, the whole MOD and Geneva and all that bollocks.
All of that could have been cut. Or possibly it was meant to have a greater part and then they couldn't shoot it. Because there were lots of things that they couldn't shoot for financial reasons or they just ran out of time or whatever. And maybe they cut stuff like that. Hmm. But in that case, well, fucking cut all of it.
They've blown their whole budget on this series anyway by painting that horse.
Also, the retro futuristic rotary phone with a display on it. I love that thing. That was great. Oh, wait. One more soundbite because this is so great. Sorry, this just popped up in my notes here. This is a Billy Rutledge quote. His rotary phone is turned on and it's the secretary. And the secretary goes, "Outside call, sir." And he, instead of saying, "Who is it?" he goes,
"Yes.
Outside call for you, sir.
Male or female?"
He does.
Why?
Yes. Why? Why does he need to know if it's a... Like, why is that his priority? He's like, "Oh, well, I don't have time, but if it's a lady..."
Then I really don't have time.
There's also that wonderful, speaking of, there's that great scene when Not Mavic Chen picks up the phone and it's the secretary from the MOD calling him, going like, "Oh, there's Billy Rutledge on the phone for you." And he's like, "Oh, hello. Oh, hello."
There's a couple of things then, just tiny little tidbits that aren't really worth talking about.
Yeah.
The automated receptionists. Right in the beginning. Could have been cut, but also I think that was kind of fun because obviously that bears out. It's quite prescient, isn't it?
Do you want a piece of trivia about that machine?
Go on.
The voice of that machine is the voice of the woman who calls not Mavic Chen. That secretary, as in... old Billy Rutledge's secretary.
That's not trivia. That's just staff rotation.
Wait. Old Billy Rutledge's secretary is also the voice of not Mavic Chen's automated secretary and also the wife of the director.
Well, yeah. I mean,
that's already something. Okay, it's not trivia.
That's not trivia. That's just earning a little bit of extra cash.
Keeping it in the family.
Just casual nepotism. That's not trivia.
Okay,
so there's that. I thought those were kind of cool. What do we think of Packer?
Oh, Packer, who's a completely useless henchman of not Mavic Chen.
He was perfectly fine as a henchman.
Up until a point where he just failed at everything.
He was intimidating. He made some fairly clear and cogent decisions.
He was crazy intimidating in the beginning where he threatens to, like, massacre Waterleg's face.
And then Toby is just screaming at him the entire time. What sort of job satisfaction can Packer have? Must be hard to operate as a henchman.
Well, yeah, certainly if you work for Toby. Yeah. But... isn't there also a point where it's a good thing that you brought this up? I think I probably thought about this and then just completely blanked on it. Up until a certain point, he's incredibly intimidating and he almost seems younger and like more fit and like just physically imposing. And then he turns into like, oh, did you get this job by mistake? Like this kind of pudgy man who literally fails at everything. When he tries to Mission Impossible them in the lift shaft, fails at that. He fails to consider which staircase they're going down. He fails to consider which door they're taking to leave the room. He allows them to escape with, I keep forgetting her name, What's Her Legs and Zoe.
Isabel,
Miss Selfie. He fails at everything. And after every single failure, not Mavic Chen goes, "If you fail again, I will kill you." And then he failed like 5 more times.
Yeah, he was kind of...
It's a terrible job, man.
Yeah, but still, I'd feel like I couldn't do my best work.
I think he's from an agency.
Yeah, maybe.
It's like a recruitment agency, just have him on as a temp.
Henches are us.
Yeah.
Okay, another thing then.
Okay.
So early doors, the idea of Electromatics being this big conglomerate that actually controls everything and everyone and what, you know, who can come and go, et cetera, et cetera. I was super intrigued by it. I thought that'd play out more.
As was I.
In fact, this is a bit of a self-plug, but I once wrote a short story or a novella on a relatively similar ground, a dystopia based on a company and all that sort of thing, right?
Yeah.
But that didn't play out at all. Actually, Electromatics had very little to do other than the distribution of electronic goods.
Yeah, but then we only really got to see what happened to like four people in London, as opposed to the global reach that Electromatics has. Right.
That was ripe for one of those stupid radio casts that tells us something's happening in Russia or Japan's going crazy.
Yeah. Or like, oh, wait, hang on. The reason we can't count on the Russians is because they didn't know about this signal. And, you know, now they've all been taken out of commission because they love Electromatics over there in Russia. But OK, so yes, they missed a trick there, but they also missed a trick on another thing pertaining to Electromatics. And that is when DJ go in to see Not Mavic Chen, they're like, hey, dude, what do you do? And Not Mavic Chen goes, I make these, for example. Here, have one. And he gives Jamie a transistor radio, which he carries around for the entire serial. I was convinced, and incorrectly so, I was convinced
that would be some sort of mole.
Yeah, clearly he's popped a microphone in there because he wants to keep tabs on them. Why didn't he do that? That's so obvious a trick.
Also, did he give him a 1970s iPod?
Just put that out there.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Evil Steve Jobs.
Shall we jump into ratings?
Eviler, Steve.
Let's jump into ratings. Reviews. Do you want to start?
I'll start. Okay, so incredibly quickly, I loved this serial. I liked that it splits out into two parts quite neatly, first of all, but because actually, without the Cybermen, I thought the peril was kind of cool. The whole giant conglomerate was kind of cool. Toby Vaughn seemed messed up and sinister. Cybermen actually only served to enhance. It wasn't too thin, you know, it made sense. There was a bit slightly wishy-washiness into what the fuck everyone was trying to achieve, necessarily, but essentially, bad man teamed up with bad men double cross. Right. That's fine as an idea. Yeah. I thought Zoe was good. Thought she was wicked. Jamie was a bit ineffectual, but Doctor, you know, Patrick Troughton was another virtuoso performance apart from the jumping when being shot at. And I love me some Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart. Loves him.
He's pretty good.
I hope that moustache is in some sort of formaldehyde jar somewhere.
It's in the Smithsonian.
Yeah, for posterity. Okay. Long story short,
rating.
I am giving this a very solid 4.5.
Agreed. I'm giving this a 4.5 as well. The silly bits didn't bother me at all. The unit and brigadier elements of the story, absolutely fantastic. I liked the little subplot of Turner and What's-Her-Legs are going to get it on. And I think the Cybermen were just brilliant. They were possibly my favorite Cybermen to date. Plus, even though this follows a formula that we've encountered on Doctor Who before, on Classic Who before, I think this is just a sign that this formula works on me. I like the whole, like, unit and the Doctor, they team up to fight an alien force in London. It's like ground troops. It's good. I wouldn't want this every week, but I think it's really, really good when it does come around. Lastly, the only reason I'm cutting this down from 5.0, basically, the only minus points, are for the bits that I think they could have cut out of the story. Oh, in addition to the yeti of the story, which is Mavic Chen's robot body. But yeah, I'm giving this a 4.5 as well. I've got a little note about what you said. You said that Jamie was quite ineffectual in this one. During the filming of this serial, he resigned.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Zoe goes on holiday.
Yeah, she's away for one whole episode, I think. Yeah. But he resigned from his role. He's going to be around for a bit longer, but he terminated his contract. So I don't know how many more serials that contract lasts.
Oh, man.
But he decided during the filming of the serial, fuck it, I'm done with Doctor Who. Yeah, pretty crazy, right?
That is pretty crazy.
Yeah. Why would you? Like, you are on to a winner.
Yeah.
And it's legendary, and it's probably so much fun. I don't know why. Anyway, we have two minis. Shall we jump into Miniland?
Let's. Listener minis. So we have two listener minis.
Maxis.
My absolutely. I'm afraid we're going to have to slash and slice and dice.
As per usual, we're truncating this. There's a 250-word limit, people. Sorry.
No, it'll be much easier, though, if you do send us a little 250 praises and we can read the whole thing out in its glory.
Yeah.
Rather than mangle your words.
Yeah, exactly. So if you like, yeah, exactly. Send us a short version and a long version if you really want to send us a maxi as well. Either way, the maxi is available on whobackwhen.com. Just go to this post and you will find it. I wholeheartedly suggest that you read both of these in their full splendor.
So we're going to start with a relatively new old friend, Peter Zunich.
Peter Zed, the Zedmeister.
Pizu.
Pete, who is, I think, leading in terms of the amount of mini reviews he's sent in. I think he has reviewed more episodes than anyone else.
Is that right? Okay, I'll start.
Go for it.
A truly larger-than-life story that drags just a little bit at times. This story both serves to establish the need and might of UNIT, as well as give the Cybermen their epic invasion story, like we've seen already with the Daleks. UNIT delivers on action on all fronts.
He also says, just three serials away from the previous Cyberman episode, one might think the viewers might be a little cybered out. However, they take a backseat here to cyberized humans who at times seem every bit as pitiless as their allies. Tobias Vaughn is a great villain in true James Bond style.
And he concludes with, there's a bit of slowness at times, or is it a slow build? And a bit of repetition here and there, but ultimately this story stands up as the grand adventure they set out to achieve and gets a well-deserved cyber 4.4.
Oh, I will give you a standing cyber ovation, Peter. Nice one. Very well. Thank you very much
for
sending
that in. Is that an ovation that fails? And can you guess what time it is, listeners? It's time. It's time to be blessed. It's time to be Trenton blessed.
That's
how
right,
you doing, Trenton?
The next one comes from Trenton Bless. Hello, Trenton. I trust all is rad. Trenton sent in an incredibly long maxi review, so we've truncated this one as well. Do you want to start this one?
Trenton says, the invasion had an impact that would resonate throughout the coming decades. UNIT became the Doctor's home in the 70s and has had regular assignments in New Who and Torchwood. Plot elements, hypnotic control, sewers, even IE, were borrowed for Rise of the Cyberman in 2006. And the Brigadier himself has survived for 40 years, last seen in the Sarah Jones adventures in 2008, with Courtney becoming a cheerfully enthusiastic ambassador for the ongoing myth.
He goes on, I'm going to give this serial a 3.99 out of 5 if you wish round that up to a 4.0, which I do. So he gives this a 4.0 out of 5. I do really like this serial, he says, but like all serials, it still has a few problems here and there. But they are so minor. The villains are great. J, Z, and the Doctor were great. UNIT was great. And the Cybermen were great too. I'm glad the serial exists for the most part intact, and episodes 1 and 4 are animated. The unfortunate thing is, we won't see any more of the Cybermen until 1975, when Tom Baker takes over. And oh, we'll get to that. Yes, we will. That is very true. We will get to that. Thanks for sending that in, guys. Next time...
we've got a... not a good one.
For Classic, I believe it is The Crotons. And for New Who, it is...
Partners in Crime.
That's right. And for Audio Who, yep, we're still still waiting to review The Cannibalists.
I hope this becomes our scapegoat.
I think it might be. Nick, anything you want to plug? Do you have a Twitter feed of some description?
I do have a Twitter feed where you can get at me and talk to me about all things Doctor Who. It's at Nickelaley. It's no Nickel, but with Laley.
That's right. And you can high-five me online as well. I will high-five you right back. I'm at Ponkin. You know how to spell that. Thank you so much for listening, ladies and gentlemen. Be rad and excellent to each other, and cha-chow.
Bye.
Kablamo! Did you enjoy the show? Then please do what the cosmos compels you to and spread the gospel of Who Back When. Tell your friends. Don't have any friends? No problemo. Tell some strangers. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/whobackwhen. All in one word. Are you on Google Plus? Then find us on Google Plus. That's plus Who Back When. And when you do, tell us why you're on Google Plus. Who Back When just got its very own Twitter account. No lie. So give us a follow. You guessed it. That's at Who Back When. All in one word. Check us out on SoundCloud, vote us up on Reddit, listen to us on Stitcher, and head on over to our website, whobackwhen.com, where you can leave a comment, submit a review of your own, and peruse our visual index of aliens, monsters, and more, which increases in kablamos with every episode. And lastly, give us a rating and review on iTunes. Not only would it make us super chuffed, and it really, really would, but as thanks, we will transmigrate your iTunes nom de plume into the credit list of trailers for fake Doctor Who audiobooks produced by Who Back When. Have a poke around our bonus episodes to make more sense of that. That's it. Rock on and be rad and excellent to each other. Catch your earballs in our next Classic Who Review, New Who Review, or, still funny, Audio Who Review. Cha-chow.
Who Back When?